opening narration.
Akhotra Foundation presents the Akhotra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome, everyone. Today we're diving deep into a figure who's, well, practically a synonym for American capitalism, but also a huge paradox. John D. Rockefeller Sr.
Right. You hear the name and you think oil, massive wealth, maybe robber baron.
Exactly. But then there's this whole other side, the guy who basically invented modern philanthropy as we know it. How does one person become both things? That's what we want to unpack today.
It's a fantastic puzzle. And our main guide for this is Ron Chernow's incredible biography, Titan. Chernow's brilliant. You know, he did Hamilton, Washington, Morgan.
Pulitzer winner. Yeah. Uh-huh. He knows how to handle these complex historical giants.
Absolutely. And his take on Rockefeller isn't simple. He argues you can't just label him hero or villain. He was transformative, driven by this incredibly systematic, almost obsessive, methodical approach to everything.
So our mission today is to kind of get inside that mindset, right?
Yeah.
Understand the forces that shaped him, this unique blend of business drive and later massive charity, and figure out what his story tells us now.
The chronological journey, the formative years.
Definitely. And you really have to start with his childhood to get it. It was... Mm-hmm. Let's just say unconventional, shaped by two incredibly different parents.
Yeah, Chernow really digs into this, doesn't he? How did that dynamic lay the groundwork?
Well, first you have his father, William Rockefeller, known as Devil Bill.
Devil Bill. Okay, that tells you something.
Right. He was charming, apparently, but also a con man, a snake oil salesman, often absent, even a bigamist. Not exactly a stable influence.
Yikes.
But.
Yeah.
He did teach young John some things, shrewd negotiation, maybe a certain cunning, and surprisingly meticulous record keeping. Though for Bill, it was probably more about tracking his scams.
Huh. So that famous Ledger A, where Rockefeller tracked every penny from a young age, that came partly from his con man dad.
It seems like it. That obsession with numbers, with order, started super early. He was logging every cent earned and spent. A little kid doing that.
Wild. Okay, so that's one side. What about his mother?
Totally different. Eliza Davison Rockefeller. Deeply religious, a devout Baptist, very frugal, stoic. She was the rock.
Ah, okay.
She instilled piety, discipline, this strong sense of divine purpose, systematic living, self-control. So you have these two polar opposites.
Devil Bill's chaos and cunning versus Eliza's piety and order.
Exactly. And Chernow suggests this created a deep need in John for order, stability, control, almost a reaction against his father. Plus, this belief that his life, even making money, had a higher, maybe divine mission that really fueled both his business and his later giving.
The chronological journey, the rise and the struggle.
Okay, so he takes this unique psychological baggage, let's say, into the world. Post-Civil War America, pretty chaotic itself, right? Especially the early oil business. How does he go from being a meticulous clerk to seeing the potential there?
Well, he started out pretty cautiously in Cleveland, in the commission business, but he was sharp. He had this knack for finding the right partners, like Samuel Andrews, a chemist who knew the technical side of refining.
Okay, smart move.
And crucially, Henry Flagler, a brilliant strategist. What Rockefeller figured out early, and this was key, was that drilling for oil was a gamble. Boom! And bust.
Right, super unpredictable.
But refining, turning the crude oil into kerosene, lubricants. That was the choke point. That was controllable, scalable.
Ah, focus on the bottleneck.
Exactly. And this ties into his core philosophy. He famously said, competition is a sin.
Wow. That's blunt.
Yeah. He genuinely believed it was wasteful, inefficient. That consolidation under smart, disciplined management like his was actually better for everyone. It brought order to the chaos. It was, in his mind, almost a public service.
Chronological journey, peak achievements, and legacy.
That soul of a bookkeeper Chernow talks about, it wasn't just about numbers, was it? It was about the whole system, even the ruthless stuff.
Absolutely. He believed success came from doing the common things uncommonly well. He knew the cost of solder on a kerosene can, like down to the drop.
Incredible detail.
That level of detail, plus the big strategic vision. That's what built Standard Oil. It drove, for example, the Cleveland Massacre in 1872.
Sounds dramatic.
It was. In just 1 month, using secret deals with railroads for cheaper shipping rebates and aggressive price cuts, he basically forced 22 out of 26 rival refiners in Cleveland to sell out to him.
Whoa. Sell or die, basically.
Pretty much. He mastered vertical integration, controlling pipelines, rail cars, barrel factories, everything. And horizontal integration, just buying up competitors relentlessly.
And this led to the Standard Oil Trust in 1882. What exactly was that? It sounds innovative, but also maybe a bit ominous.
It was definitely innovative for the time. Before modern corporate law really developed, a trust was this legal setup.
Yeah.
Shareholders of different companies would hand over their shares and their voting rights to a small group of trustees, led by Rockefeller, of course. This let them operate as one huge entity across state lines, which was hard to do legally back then. It allowed him to centralize control over this vast empire, something like 90% of U.S. oil refining. It was genius, legally speaking, but also concentrated immense power.
Core philosophy and values, part three, continued. Backlash.
So you have this massive, unprecedented power. Naturally, people start getting nervous, right? How does this systematic, secretive guy who thinks he's bringing order suddenly become, like, public enemy number one?
Yeah, the backlash was inevitable. The sheer size and dominance of Standard Oil were just staggering. And this was the era when muckraking journalism really took off.
Right, investigative reporters exposing corporate dirt.
Exactly. And Rockefeller was the biggest target. Ida Tarbell stands out here. She was a brilliant, tenacious journalist. Her father had actually been pushed out of business by Standard Oil, so it was personal for her too.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She wrote this massive, deeply researched series, The History of the Standard Oil Company. It laid bare all the tactics, the secret rebates, the predatory pricing, crushing competitors. It was meticulously documented.
And the public reaction.
Huge outrage. Tarbell's work really crystallized Rockefeller's image as the ultimate robber baron. It fueled the whole antitrust movement, government investigations.
How did Rockefeller handle all this heat?
Terribly, frankly. His PR instincts were awful. He was intensely private, secretive by nature, and he genuinely believed he was right, that his methods were efficient and ultimately good. He couldn't understand the criticism.
So he came across as arrogant.
Yeah, evasive in court, sort of dismissive. It just made him look guiltier. All this public pressure and legal action eventually led to the Supreme Court decision in 1911.
The big one, breaking up Standard Oil.
Right. They ruled it was an illegal monopoly under the Sherman Antitrust Act and ordered it dissolved into smaller, separate companies.
Did that actually hurt him financially?
Ironically, no. He ended up owning shares in all these new baby standards, and many of them soared in value. He might have actually gotten richer from the breakup, but the symbolism was huge. The Titan had been challenged.
The Chronological Journey Legacy, Part 5. Turning point 1 and 2.
Okay, so the empire's technically broken up. He's wealthier than ever, but his reputation is mud. This feels like a major turning point. What happens next? This is where the story shifts, right? The second act.
Exactly. This is arguably the most fascinating transformation. He embarks on this second career, not in business, but in philanthropy. And not just charity, but something radically new.
Okay, tell me about that. How does he pivot so dramatically?
A key figure here is Frederick T. Gates. He was a former Baptist minister who became Rockefeller's top advisor on giving away his fortune.
Interesting. A minister guiding the robber baron.
Right. And Gates had this vision. He convinced Rockefeller to apply the exact same systematic, data-driven strategic thinking to philanthropy that he'd used to build Standard Oil.
So treat giving away money like running a business.
Pretty much. They moved away from just handing out cash, traditional charity, to what they called scientific giving or wholesale philanthropy. This feels like a second key turning point after the consolidation of power.
Scientific giving. What does that mean in practice?
It meant targeting the root causes of problems, not just the symptoms. Using research, collecting data, measuring the impact of donations, and crucially, building institutions that could tackle these problems long term rather than just making one-off contributions.
Like building sustainable solutions.
Precisely. And the results were staggering. He funded the creation of the University of Chicago, essentially from scratch, turning it into a major research university.
A huge impact on education.
Absolutely. Then the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research in 1901, now Rockefeller University, it became a powerhouse, pioneering medical science. They funded work that helped eradicate diseases like hookworm in the American South, later yellow fever, just world-changing stuff.
Wow. Hookworm. That's specific.
Yeah. Gates identified it as a major overlooked problem crippling the southern economy. They tackled it systematically, research, treatment, education. Classic Rockefeller Gates approach.
Well, but there were others too, right?
Oh, yes. The General Education Board, founded in 1903, which did enormous work transforming education, especially for African Americans in the South. funding schools, training teachers, and in the big one, the Rockefeller Foundation in 1913, which became this global force for public health, science, education. Its impact is almost immeasurable.
Core philosophy and values, part five, turning point three.
So this systematic approach, this long-term vision, it's the same mindset that built the monopoly, now applied to solving global problems. It's kind of mind-blowing. Was it just about fixing his reputation, though, or was there something deeper driving this massive philanthropic shift? This feels like the third major turning point, the conscious decision to build this philanthropic legacy.
Chernow argues, and the evidence suggests, it was much deeper than just PR. Yes, improving his image was probably a factor, but Rockefeller's philanthropy was profoundly tied to his Baptist faith.
Back to his mother's influence.
Very likely. He had this quote, "I believe the power to make money is a gift from God, to be developed and used to the best of our ability for the good of mankind."
Okay, that's pretty explicit.
Yeah. He genuinely seemed to believe he was a steward of God's wealth. Accumulating it was part of his duty, but so was giving it away effectively. It was how he squared the sometimes brutal methods of accumulation with his conscience and his faith. Philanthropy wasn't just an afterthought. It was the fulfillment of his perceived divine mission.
Human lessons and reflection.
So stepping back from the timeline, what does Rockefeller's life, this whole journey, really teach us today? It feels like more than just a history lesson.
Oh, absolutely. It forces you to grapple with some big, uncomfortable ideas. First, there's that duality we keep coming back to. American capitalism itself, maybe?
How so?
Well, it created enormous value. Efficiency brought down the price of kerosene, which lit up America. But through methods that crushed competition and concentrated power intensely, then he used that power for immense social good. It makes you question, how do we weigh those things? Efficiency versus fairness, ends versus means. How do we judge these complex figures who literally built the world we live in, flaws and all?
Right. It's not black and white.
Not at all. Second, the sheer power of systematic thinking. Whether building Standard Oil or the Rockefeller Foundation, his method was the same. Gather data, analyze obsessively, plan long-term, execute with discipline. That approach, doing the common things uncommonly well, is just a revolutionary force. It's a timeless lesson in how to achieve massive impact, for better or worse.
That focus, that rigor, apply to anywhere.
Exactly. Third, it's a stark lesson in how business ethics evolve. What was considered sharp practice, even normal, in the 1870s, like those railroad rebates, was seen as predatory, even legal, just a few decades later.
Yeah, the ground shifted under him.
It reminds us that ethical standards aren't fixed. They change. Businesses, powerful people, need to adapt and be aware of that broader societal context. You can't just assume yesterday's rules apply today.
That ties into the next point, maybe. His terrible PR.
Definitely. His secrecy, his inability or refusal to engage with public criticism. It was disastrous for his reputation. It's a huge lesson in transparency and communication. In today's world, that kind of opacity from someone so powerful would be unthinkable or even more damaging. You have to engage.
Yeah, you can't just hide away.
And finally, it's just a powerful reminder of individual agency. One person with a unique vision and relentless determination really can reshape industries, institutions, even global health. For good and ill, individuals can drive monumental change.
Three final takeaways.
Okay, that's a lot to process. So let's try to boil it down. If you, our listener, take away just three things from this deep dive into Rockefeller, what should they be? First, maybe an emotional insight. It's a glimpse into that internal world, isn't it? How someone with immense power justifies their actions to themselves. How deeply held beliefs, like his faith, allowed him to see ruthless business and incredible generosity as two sides of the same coin, part of a single divinely ordained purpose. Second, an intellectual insight. It's truly striking how the exact same methodical, data-driven, long-term strategic thinking was the engine behind both creating a near-total monopoly and pioneering solutions to massive global problems like disease and lack of education. The process was the power, applied across totally different fields. And third, a universal insight. His story, especially that deliberate second act, really hammers home that building a positive legacy isn't automatic. It takes as much, maybe even more, conscious effort, strategic planning, and maybe even some soul-searching as building the initial success or fortune itself. Legacy is built, not just inherited or stumbled upon.
Final provocative thought and closing narration.
And maybe a final thought to leave you with. Rockefeller's life forces that really tough question, can the good done in giving away a fortune ever truly wash away the methods used to acquire it? How do we weigh the scales when judging these architects of modernity with all their contradictions? Something to ponder.
Definitely something to ponder. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the incredibly complex world of John D. Rockefeller Sr. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.